This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Welcome to Hartford Street Zen Center. The abbot is not feeling well, so he asked me to sit up here. And one thing he suggested, and we could give it a try, is that we all, if you have a question, ask it, and then we can have a discussion. So that's the suggestion. I know it's a little different than me giving a talk, but how about we give that a try? I'm throwing the ball on your court. Does anyone have anything that's on their mind in particular this morning?
I've got one for you.
Okay.
When I first came to Zen Center, I would hear a lot of sort of variations on the theme of Zazen is pointless. There's no goal in practice.
Mm-hmm.
And it was totally befuddling to me at that time. So I'm just wondering, what would you say about that?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, basically Zazen is useless is what they're saying, right?
Which is not very encouraging.
Right.
I
mean, I think from the ultimate point of view, if we say that Zazen's doing something, we're missing the point. That's why they're telling you that. But from the conventional point of view, at least for me, sitting quietly seems to create some positive effect for me, and that's been my personal experience. So, so I guess for me, it would be thinking about those two levels. Like ultimately, it's useless, but conventionally, it's useful for me. But maybe the people that said that to you would not agree.
Well, I'm assuming that they would say things like that because it's very easy to get caught up in the process and to think you're going somewhere with it, so that actually you're sort of always ahead of yourself.
Okay.
With the attitude of
you're
going, something's to be gained, you know?
Right.
Which is sort of takes you out of the moment.
Yeah,
you know.
I think I know from my study time with the Vipassana tradition, they have a map called the 16 stages of insight, and they don't like to show that to students first, because then you're like, oh, have I met this signpost, or what's the next signpost? So I think that's maybe what you're pointing to. But then on the other hand, if Zazen's too much, too broad, and there's no goal at all, you might become discouraged. So I think the trust is that you feel some benefit in your life. I imagine you do, because otherwise why would you do it? unless it's a deep faith you have. Why do you get up every morning and sit?
I guess faith might be one word that someone might use. Might not be my first choice of words, but for me, I feel like I have to. I don't feel like there's a choice. I mean, of course there's a choice. I could sleep in.
Yeah.
I could run away from home.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, I could do anything. And it's not that those ideas don't occur to me, but for some reason, I'm not even sure why exactly. I have to do it.
Well, that's, for me, that's, it feels uplifting that you have to do it, but also could feel confining, but it sounds like it's not a confining, like you have to do it. It's more like a...
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it feels that way.
Oh.
I'm not saying it's not, you know, it's never, it's always, you know, just that it's easy or anything like that.
Mm.
Or that it, it's something that there's some sort of imposition from outside somewhere.
Mm.
I mean, I think when you go, if you go to someplace like Tassajara or someplace like that, it's really easy to feel like it's this, you're walled in on all, no matter which way you turn, you just can't get away, you know? And it's just not very comfortable sometimes to feel that way.
Mm.
But usually it doesn't feel that way for me.
Mm. Yeah.
I just, I think it does have benefits, but they're not always like, I certainly know there's benefits because my husband tells me sometimes when I'm off my game, like if I'm not doing it for much, I say, maybe you should go start that more regularly.
Mm-hmm.
He knows.
So you're doing it, are you doing it for him or for you?
Well, the both of us in that case, you know. Although I also think that the original point you made in the beginning about it not being too disciplined, or I think it can be micromanaged, certainly. It can be overworked, and then of course maybe that takes some of the joy out of it. But I'm not even sure why. When I first started many years ago, I didn't notice what was happening until maybe several weeks, but then I started noticing I was a little less jumpy and a little bit more composed. And I wasn't sure why that was happening. It just was happening by itself, really, because I certainly wasn't concentrating on becoming, you know, I was just trying to do the practice. So it does have benefits, but not sure exactly why that should happen.
Yes.
I heard what David said. I mean, I can understand, I guess, to some extent, like, people saying that, but I've never liked that language, like, oh, Zazen is useless. I've never liked that. But at the same time, I feel like, I guess in one sense of understanding that, is thinking, like, I don't feel like it's about, you don't, it's not like you're doing it to get something you want, because that's kind of like part and parcel of the trap of stuff, can be part and parcel of the trap of suffering anyways, just chasing after things and not finding yourself where you are. And but it seems like it's impossible to talk about this kind of stuff. I mean, even saying it's useless is not, I don't find that a particularly helpful thing to say or encouraging.
Useful.
Yeah.
Useless.
Yeah, I don't like that. I mean, obviously,
Maybe it's helpful for somebody who's like really attached to like this is so helpful and this is what, you know, so maybe that's what it, I mean, I think that these teachings can be helpful for one individual at one moment, but then when we take it out of context, it might not be helpful. It sounds like it might not have been helpful for you at that moment either.
Yeah, when it was almost like the party line.
Okay.
When I first went to Zen Center, it was almost, I mean, you heard it so much.
Oh.
I mean, it was like every other lecture you heard, there was some variation on that theme. And maybe it was because back then there were huge numbers of people that were completely new to practice. And so maybe that it was generated out of that, you know, I don't know, but it when I look back, it's like, I mean, befuddlement was how I felt at the time. But of course, now when I look back, I think, well, gee, thanks a lot. That's no that no help at all.
Well, I do find it helpful because I think it's really easy to get caught up in the idea that doing this is gonna get you somewhere, and that thought is always kind of there in some form or other, that like I should be doing this because it'll make me a better person, or
mm-hmm. yeah,
I'll be like one of those great teachers one day if I just keep at it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not actually helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not saying that it's useless isn't the same as saying that you're doing nothing by
right.
doing it. It can sound that way, I think.
Yeah.
But that you're not doing it, you're not using it
mm-hmm.
for something.
Yeah.
You're just doing it.
Would you say like kind of like walking, like let's say you're doing a hike to a certain summit, but as you're walking the path, you can just enjoy that as well, right? Like, the summit's good too, but so is the path.
Yeah.
Would you say like that?
And the summit might look so far away that you could never imagine getting there.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes, sir.
Does anything have to be useful or useless?
Does anything have to be? What do you mean by that? Does it, like...
Do they have to fall in these two categories?
No. No, it doesn't. What other categories would you say? Somewhere in between the spectrum of somewhat useful? Or... Well, I think we all have limited time, right? So if you're spending... How many hours a week do you think you're spending sitting quietly?
Best weeks, maybe 8 to 10.
So what if I told you that you're wasting 8 to 10 hours a week of your life? How would that be bad, or would it be a relief? Or
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yes, sir.
So his question reminds me I was thinking, what was the meaning of the useless,
mm-hmm.
and connecting with Zazen.
Mm-hmm.
So, as my understanding is that even we are practicing for a couple of decades,
mm-hmm.
so we cannot get the ton of incomes or supernatural superstition to get a lotteries, or maybe we cannot be more beautiful or handsome.
Uh-huh.
That, my understanding, the implication of the usefulness, uselessness, sorry, is. So, and then more, I just started that Zazen practice. Usually I'm more belong to the Pure Buddhism
mm-hmm.
tradition, so chanting is my
mm-hmm.
main practice. But for me, the Zazen is more a rather external experience, or more I observing more internal reflection.
Mm-hmm.
So why I'm here, why I am so such a not good guy, so, and not perfectly compassionate to others, or
mm-hmm.
why I am so clinging to other a lot of desires.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a release. What the questioning why, and then just releasing everything. So and then
So when those things arise, like I'm not a good person, you just it's just release that. You just watch it, or
yeah.
is it okay?
Yes.
That sounds good.
So that's just okay. Be
right, but in my mind, that sounds almost useful.
Or no, it's nothing. It's changing. If I'm realizing that, oh, I'm not a good person, it's okay.
Okay.
But still, I'm the same person.
Okay.
Nothing changing, nothing beneficial, but still,
okay.
yeah, I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's just Thanks. Something inherent in the human brain
mm-hmm.
that wants to categorize everything.
Okay.
So you want to say useful or useless.
Okay.
You know, that's just, it's binary.
It's like what Dalip was saying.
It's like positive charge, negative charge.
Okay.
You know, just it's an, or I'm a good guy. I'm not a good guy. It's like those are all categories that we.
Mm.
I mean, we sort of create them. We certainly put names to them.
Mm.
And then kind of get caught up in the name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I often find resonate with. That is not very helpful for me to use those type of words of useless. Just sounds sort of denigrating,
mm-hmm.
and said, very binary. It brings kind of into the split, which our mind tends to want to see, and, you know, these splits. I mean, I can kind of, I see, sort of resonate with that teaching, you know, if you see the Buddha, kill him. You know, it's like, okay, don't be pursuing it as something in and of itself, as that's life. On the other hand, I like to think of it, you know, as a jewel, as a treasure, as an abiding place to be, to let sort of that binary way of our day-to-day thinking begin to drop, just like love being in the wilderness. So many of us have been, you know, to special places, whether that's in the Grand Canyon or Yosemite, and you're just inspired, you know, perhaps with it's a sunset or the serenity of the place. And it fills your heart with such, you know, joy and peace. And so then, you know, you come back maybe to the city and then you're yearning, oh, I wish I was back there. I wish I was back there. That's the kind of life I need. Instead of sort of, oh, I bring that Yosemite, I bring the Grand Canyon with me wherever I am. Kind of like what Richard was saying, I find like it's helpful to think it as ripples. As rippling effects, that it's concentric. It just sort of flows in multifaceted ways throughout my life, and difficult to put words, you know, because words, this, not that, this, not that, versus more in terms of imagery.
It's beautiful.
And so I find that, you know, it's a place where I can sort of come back to of home. That, you know, in the midst of all sort of my daily trials and tribulations, and recenter and refuel. And then it's like I find those moments also maybe just in terms of washing dishes more informally, or having a warm conversation, and this is, I'm right here with the in this mindful presence of compassion, and so it said it begins to permeate in other ways in my life. So I like just sort of that pebble dropping into the pool.
Thank you. That sounds very peaceful in a way. And I was thinking about kind of back how we're talking about the binary useful and useless, and then you get just go deeper in your meditation if you're willing to let go in meditation away from those binaries, those, to get to a place where we're not knowing. Maybe that happens for you, like you're saying, in nature, or for people here on the cushion. For me, I find it, you know, a little bit scary as to like starting to let go of those knowing, but then it can be, get to a place that's actually peaceful. That's what I think you're saying, and that's been my experience. But I think there, at least to get through that, to be willing to take the risk of letting go of our, I don't know what you'd call it, our clinging to this and that, good and, you know, our lives, our ideas. Which in my experience they seem to come back anyway when you let go, but I think that's for me the art or the of sitting quietly, and maybe like nature comes up easier, but also sitting quietly, say we're here in the city, to watch those to watch our mind and to watch our attachments and then gradually let them go to that place, the peaceful place. As Dogen would say, the gateway of repose and bliss. So I don't know if that resonates with people.
The unknown's, it's just the unknown. And when we tend to think, oh, the unknown is scary,
mm-hmm.
or the unknown is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that some people have predispositions to think
mm-hmm.
one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my tends to be the fearful
right.
side
yeah.
of things, but I've certainly met people in my life, it's like, every time they turn a corner, it's like there's a new experience to be had. It's
mm.
exciting. Life is, you know,
mm.
this wonderful flow of things. And so it's that's interesting to notice that as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's true, I think, because I was saying for me as well, it is, I'm more in that, I get scary into the unknown, but other people, maybe it's exciting.
I was thinking about that recently. Because I was reading about how fearlessness is the main gift of the Bodhisattva.
Okay.
And that the fact that a lot of people are so afraid of the unknown.
Right.
Including myself, I mean, I think everyone, but
yeah.
But that we're actually cultivating that not knowing in
mm-hmm.
in Zazen, in practice. And for a lot of people, I think that's really scary because you're giving up this control of that your ego usually has of your
right.
perceptions and feeling in control of what's going on around you.
Yeah.
But if you give that up, that actually is kind of scary because you're going kind of into the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where I think the Bodhisattva vow is really
mm.
helpful and necessary.
Right. Yeah, there's a quote on the wall. I take the stairs up to work, and there's people that put, you know, like, see life, is that UCSF? They put see life all the way up the stairway, but there's a quote from somebody saying, you know, man can't discover new things unless they're willing to let go of the shore. And I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. But to get into that water, you have to actually get beyond, see, you know, and that can be, I guess, terrifying, or it can be exciting, but just gradually in our practice, getting beyond the shore that we know and going into that sea and trusting that we'll be okay.
That,
yeah.
I think that's so true.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then I get these Dharma dreams.
Okay.
About a couple months ago. Yeah. I don't know, this stuff just works on you.
All right.
Yeah.
What's a Dharma dream?
Yeah. I know the teachings and everything kind of
okay.
filtered down. So a couple of months ago, I got this dream, and they usually come sometime before I wake up.
Okay.
And it's usually just kind of like a one-liner. I don't know whether it's a voice or whatever, but just it was just this one-liner that came to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, good and bad are one. And that's all it was, just a one-liner. Good and bad are one. So I wake up to this one-liner.
Yeah.
Good and bad are one. And stumbling around the house, getting my life together, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, is it good and bad or one? And then something else comes up. It's like, sleepy, bad, coffee, good. I mean, this is just the way the mind naturally just kind of, you know,
right.
arranges things.
Kind of populates that way.
Right,
yeah.
right. So it does kind of seep in, the teachings, you know. And
yeah.
I began to realize that, yeah, well, that's what I'm always doing, you know, categorizing things. I don't, this doesn't feel good to me, and that does feel good to me, and so on. But, you know, reality, phenomenal world, it's basically one, and a lot of different things happen. And
mm-hmm.
If I'm constantly going to be categorizing one thing as bad and another thing as good, I'm going to drive myself crazy. So I think there's one just, you know, the lesson to me from the whole dream was maybe I should just stop calling things good and bad all the time, although it's going to happen naturally anyway. But I don't necessarily have to dwell on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it does work to my advantage. Although this type of information might not be a good thing to share with the grieving widow, you know, when they're in a moment, you know, when people are in distress, it might
mm-hmm.
not be a good thing to say, yeah, well, you know, good, bad, what's the difference, you know?
Mm-hmm.
One has to use a little bit of wisdom about it, but I think there is a certain wholeness to life,
mm-hmm.
and the practice does actually give me ways of dealing with that wholeness, even when the wholeness doesn't feel so good.
Mm-hmm. And I think we have to conventionally, when you get, you know, maybe when we're sitting or like you're dreaming, but in the conventional world, we do have to have good or bad, or else we're, you know, our society is not going to be in a big,
stuff.
It's going to be in a big mess, you know. What'd you say?
I could be doing a lot of crazy stuff.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
so
it's called schizophrenia.
Yeah, so, so
you get that the mind has no longer has filters.
Well, I mean, that's why
you're in trouble when that happens.
Yeah, I mean, so I think as we journey, like we're talking about this journey to let go of our ideas, to also be grounded, come very grounded in conventional reality, good and bad, helpful, unhelpful, useful, you know, get grounded in that, and then take that trip, that adventure away from it. But don't, I mean, I guess that quote said you have to lose sight of this shore, but I would say maybe don't completely lose sight of that shore. I don't know, but that's because, like you said, then you might.
Yeah.
I mean, like this, I've read too. Like they say, yeah, schizophrenic is sort of drowning in the same water that the mystic is swimming in. So you don't want to actually, you don't want to drown in that water.
Right.
It's not going to be a good experience.
At least wear a life preserver.
Yeah, a life preserver. Yeah, yeah. Be safe. But it's also good to look at our ego, where our ego is sticking to things, and explore that. I think the exploration is scary and exciting, both.
I'm sure if you started talking to Dogen about this shore and that shore, I mean, he'd probably slap you.
Dogen would have slapped me a long time ago, I'm sure. But I would have slapped him right back.
Oh, I'd like to see that.
Oh, yeah?
Dogen, by the way, for those of you who don't know, is kind of the founder of our school in Japan.
He's founder of the Soto Zen School,
yeah,
and he lived in 12...
Studying him during our study hour right now.
He lived 1200 to 1253?
53.
Yeah, so 53 years. Yeah, and I don't know how... How does Pure Land, do you guys study Dogen at all, or no?
Some of them, yes.
Some of them, okay.
Of them.
I know he disappeared in Japan for a while, right? No one was reading Dogen for a while.
Yeah, because he didn't leave any materials.
He didn't?
For a long time, yeah. And then, yeah, Furumonji is a Dogen's. And I'm not standing without.
Which practice?
Furumonji. So it's no letters. Is how to say it in English? I don't know.
I would think Shikantaza, right? No, but you're saying, no. You mean no, don't read.
Oh yeah, yes.
Like no reading.
Do you have something in similar concept in it?
I don't know. I don't know what it was like when you got to Zen. When I got to Zen Center, I think I was told not to read in the beginning, right? Were you told that?
No, relying on too much of the reading.
Rely on your experience rather than books, yeah. Yeah.
There's certainly plenty of classes around when
I
was there.
Yeah.
You know, Buddhism 101 and whatnot.
I mean, I think, again, that's the useful, useless thing. Like, you don't, you know, if you read too many books and you're like, oh, this is how my experience should be, this is the way I should be going, rather than just trusting your own experience as you traverse the deep waters of your own mind or soul or whatever you want to call it.
How about, is there anything that's come up for you in practice recently that you want to talk about?
Throw it back in my court, right?
Trying to draw a darn talk out of you.
Oh, yes. Oh, draw it out. Okay. In practice, just trying to figure out how much I want to share. I struggle maybe the same way David, like wanting to, you know, I do try to get up and sit every morning and wonder if that is any use or if I should just be resting more. It's like, so I think about that sometimes in terms of practice. I don't know if that was what you were driving at, but that's definitely something that I struggle with, but then I usually actually feel much better throughout the day when I have sat. Yeah, I don't have a huge amount to share. How about you?
Well, I have been thinking recently about, this sort of came up as we were talking earlier, but I've been really appreciating, and maybe this is sort of making Zazen useful for myself, but I've been thinking of it as an excuse to just exist and just really bring my whole body mind into the present moment, which is always, it's always possible, and I'm always you know, kind of trying to bring that into my life, but Zazen, the set periods of it, or just sitting down to it, is it's like an excuse to do that, when sometimes it can feel hard to see how you can practice it in any given situation throughout the day. But yeah, actually sitting down for it is just like a really great way to to just be like, all right, this is all I'm doing. And I think that helps to integrate it into the rest of your life. But then also there's like that, the small Zazen, like that sitting down and doing it, and then the big Zazen of really, you know, bringing your full body mind into the present.
The big Zazen that's always happening.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think if nothing else, it's probably useful for us to put down our phones and devices for 40 minutes and be quiet in this modern day. Yes?
So if I have a different question.
Okay.
If I recall, you have a pretty stressful job.
Okay.
How do you sustain your sitting or practice on some of your worst days?
Do you mean, like, how do I retain composure throughout the day, or like during the period, or?
Yeah, or how do you get yourself to sit?
Well, usually my general sitting time is 6 a.m., so that's usually before the stress comes up. But during the day, I have a job right now at the hospital at UCSF, where it's called patient relations. So I have a job where people generally call me to complain. Sometimes they call with compliments, and so it can get stressful and it can get heated, and so it has been. It one thing that I've learned with that job is about anger and people's anger, and that anger is not always, like, it is another emotion that arises and it can flow over me. And that part of practice has been helpful from, like, a, if I go back again, talking about the ocean from my older life of spending time in the ocean or surfing, when you have the waves on the surface and you can just dive right underneath them, and then the waves don't hurt you. So it's like you get deeper in the water and then you're kind of, you're free from that tumultuous surface. So I think in my job, when people are coming at me, when those waves are coming at me from people or whatever, just diving deeper. And, hello, are you still there, sir? Are you still there? Can I yell? Nope, I'm sitting underneath your complaint. So that's And, you know, and that's also why, I mean, I might be misusing our sitting zazen, but one thing that's useful for zazen for me is just to sit in that stuff kind of bubbles up, and then it feels like it sort of clean that out or something. So, it's very helpful. And for me, zazen's very helpful for me. Maybe, I don't know, maybe can't say useful, but it's helpful. Yeah. Does that help? Does that
answer?
Okay.
If you stay with that metaphor of the water,
okay.
if you're going underneath,
right,
the water,
the wave, yeah.
Do you experience the waves? See what I mean?
Yeah.
Know what I mean, like if somebody's yelling at you,
right?
You know, I mean, obviously part of you is conscious.
Right.
Of the fact that they're yelling and that they're upset.
Right.
And that maybe even you're getting upset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, yeah, I mean, so that's all that's going on. It's not like you sort of bliss out.
Well, that's right? What I'm saying. So it's like, okay, so maybe explain that a little bit more. Is since I know, I have that practice of knowing, I can go under that. I can dive down for a moment. Blah, 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 blah. UCSF, blah, 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 blah. And I dive down, right? Then I come back up. Okay, sir, ma'am, okay, I hear you. Dived. So it's kind of a maybe like a respite, like a little tiny
just
break.
A
little break,
take a
yeah,
breath.
Take a breath. And I think that's where, when I first learned meditation through mindfulness-based stress reduction, that was what was, I realized, oh, I don't always have to be in my thoughts. I can actually drop down and let them, and that's, for me, was such a helpful tool. So I think in this job, when there's, or any job, when things are stressful, I'm sure Dilip, you have stressful meetings or things, right? Things happen. You can, do you ever do that yourself? Drop down and just take a moment and then come back to?
I aspire to.
What's that?
I aspire to.
You aspire to, okay, yeah. I'm not saying I totally mastered it, but yeah, I think this practice for me is helpful in that way in the day-to-day. Just to remember that this place. It's funny, at work I have this tea from this spa in Santa Cruz called Well Within. It's like a hot tub spa, and the tea, you know, is chamomile, and, you know, has this very, I don't know, calming, but it also reminds me of that spa. So I'm at work when things are coming and I'm just drinking that, so that's also it's also helpful. And maybe like the gentleman who mentioned, you know, the woods, right? Maybe when you're in the city, if you think, I need to be back in the Grand Canyon, of course that's a sense of suffering, but if you just remember the Grand Canyon, it brings you that sense of peace, then maybe that's, you've brought that peace back with you. Does that
make
sense?
Yeah, that experience is always there. You know, it's once it's there, it's not sort of a past, is the memory re-triggers the experience right in the moment. So you're right, yeah, then, oh, come back to just maybe my breath and relaxing, you know, around it. So it's recognition of the even sort of that duality, that even in this moment where I'm despairing or discouraged, there's still peace in me.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's all around, even though I'm not feeling it. So it's just kind of the tea, you know, as you were saying.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, here it is.
Yeah.
Here it is. So,
yeah.
I like... one of my teachers helped me with a technique to sort of just come back into the moment of thinking that, you know, the zazen is in the, you know, the myriad things of life. It's here. It's just saying to myself, what is this? What is this? And then it's just like it's sort of kind of like, oh, where am I? What is this? And then just
remembering to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you want to say?
Oh yeah, it reminds me. There was a teacher who gave a talk here a couple of years ago, and she described it as having vacation mind.
Oh.
And I really like that because it's like that openness and curiosity about
mm-hmm.
your experience,
mm-hmm.
Even in your daily life, but like
mm-hmm.
like you have when you're on vacation in a new place, and
mm-hmm.
everything is just the way it is, and it's interesting, and it's worth attention.
Mm-hmm. You're talking sort of like I was saying, you can drop, even in the middle of like a difficult time, you can drop into that little vacation, take a mini vacation, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Just the mindset of it,
yeah.
Of, yeah, the openness.
Yeah. And I think that's helpful too, as Del was asking about my job, is like when I see people angry and kind of deflecting things and blaming a lot of other people, I can see from studying my mind, I see where their mind is going, and that helps me have some compassion as well, even if the energy is intense and coming at me, just as, okay, we're all, you know, somewhat similar as people. We all, you know, want to know and want to say, they did this, they did this, and don't you agree with me? Don't you? I mean, that's often when people call me, they want me my job is to sort of mediate between, say, a patient and a doctor or a practitioner that they're angry with or somebody. So the patient's goal seems to be to try to get me on their side. So, you know, and I sit with them and I hear them say, I know, I understand that's your experience. I understand it's your experience. But I try not to just, you know, it's like I can feel them want me to like, yes, this is, and that's wrong, right? That's wrong, right? And it's like, well, that's your experience. I don't know if it's right or wrong. I don't know.
Like trying to be nonpartisan while you're involved in politics.
Mm-hmm. Right.
How do you do that? Gee. Like virtually impossible in a way, and yet
yeah,
it's a worthwhile effort.
It's a worthwhile effort. I mean, I have my own ideas, but with them, I sort of, I don't know. I don't know if that's wrong. I mean, I don't say that. I'll say, well, I hear what you're saying. That's your experience. You're trying to validate people's experience.
I think a lot of times people just, they want to be heard.
They do.
I mean,
yeah.
Regardless of whatever else there may be.
Right.
They want to be heard. And if they feel like they're being heard, there's some, perhaps,
right.
some satisfaction, at least in part, you know.
Yes,
that.
That's part of the job.
Yeah.
If they feel heard, we still talk to the other folks about it and try to get a mediation, but there seems to be, yeah, they seem to, I mean, in this day and age too, it's like people are they call my office and they actually get somebody, you know, where they call other lines within our company and their company. You guys all know about it, right? You get a robot saying, do you want that? You know, press one, press, and then you get back to the same thing and you're like circling around and you can't get a person. So yeah, once they get a person, it's just, why do they have to be so angry sometimes? Like, hey, I'm a person, I'm not a robot. It's around, do we stop? It's around 11. Should we stop?
Yeah.
Does anyone else have any other last burning questions? Any from new people who are here? Anything? Welcome. Well, anyway, thank you for trying this process that we did, and appreciate all the questions and the discussion, and wishing you many blessings with your practice as you explore the depths of your mind and explore your daily life and taking micro vacations or whatever way practice is helping in your life. I want to encourage that and wish you many blessings. Thank you.